You are listening to Positive Living Vibrations with Sara Troy.
I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. Welcome to another series of Positive Living Vibrations with Sara Troy and my guest today, Noelle Mead Izzy. And I'm hoping I have pronounced that right. We're going to be talking today about the creatures of the world that are unseen, unnoticed, and unappreciated. All creatures need an advocate to speak out for them, especially as humans can be blind, deaf, and dumb at times to what really makes this world go round. My guest today, Noelle, is speaking of creatures so small, so global, so unseen by many that we do not know the impact of the loss of these creatures that is having on the world. We're inclined to take things for granted. And when we actually understand how the ecosystem works and how every single tiny little thing, however minuscule to us, has a purpose, maybe we'll be a little bit more appreciative and respectful of what needs to happen. So we're all big and small, we're beautiful and sometimes gross, but we're all linked and we're all important to this planet. It is time we stopped acting like we are it all and pay attention to the creatures that do get out there and work for us. Things like bats, things like bees, they're disappearing, we're killing them off. What is happening to them and how does it affect our world? Noelle is an entrepreneur, a philanthropist, author, speaker, award-winning graphic designer, and renowned NATO journalist. She captures contemporary and visual reality with her camera and combines wildlife anecdotes and facts to encourage every person's potential to connect and preserve nature. Her passion is for nature and wildlife photography, and it stems from her research and study of the wisdom of the animal world, animal symbolism, and animal totems. She also endeavors to discover the extraordinary with the ordinary right in our own backyards, and her book, The Hummingbird That Answered My Heart's Calling, is a testament to the power of that nature and the ability to touch, heal, reconnect humans to their true nature. It's a book with 40 full-color photographs and custom-designed book cover and interior pages. To her delight, a segment of her experience with Artemis, the hummingbird. He was featured in the United States Human Society publication, All Animals. But Noelle's commitment to nature goes way beyond her work as a nature journalist. She's leading a crusade to recognize and protect the four power pollinators, the bees, the birds, the butterflies, and the bats. I know you don't like bats. You think they're awful. But wait until you hear what they do for you and why they're here. It's not all to do with Batman, folks. These bats serve a purpose to us all. So she's known as the Pollinator Queen. And that's because she is the advocate for these pollinators, offering advice how to build a hummingbird-friendly backyard habitat and ways to give back to the bee nation. Methods of protecting and supporting essential creatures that are crucial to our food chain. So let's find out how this all happened. I believe she was sitting on her deck, kind of letting a little sunlight kiss her brow, and at a crossroads in her life. And a little hummingbird came to pay her a visit, and this hummingbird changed her life completely. Good morning, Noelle. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great. And I love your story of your hummingbirds. We have to share this and how it all came about, because it's quite extraordinary how one tiny little creature, when we pay attention to it, of course, can change your whole perspective and your whole direction in life. How about you share with us that story of you meeting your hummingbird?
Well, like you said, it was during a crossroads in my life, during the market crash of 2008, and the subsequent what-ifs that were going on in my life as I watched people lose their homes, lose their jobs, lose their retirement. Everything that everyone seemed to work for financially was, you know, just falling away. And at the time, I had just started my own business. It was a graphic design company. I left Warner Brothers to pursue entrepreneurship. So at the time, I felt really confident that this was a great opportunity. The timing was right. The conditions were right. I had purchased my own home. I was newly single. And suddenly, the market crashed. And I fell into the trap of listening to the news, listening to everything that was going on. And each time I did that, the anxiety would take over. Mm-hmm. And I started to experience physical panic attacks, which, you know, if anybody has ever experienced anxiety or panic attacks, you do feel like you're having a heart attack. I mean, I felt like I was ready to go, you know. And so I went and saw a doctor, and he said, you know, the good news is panic attacks can't kill you. We can give you some medication for it if you like. And I really wasn't at that place yet. I wasn't ready to go the route of medication. So instead, I just decided to pray. And for me, that prayer took on kind of, led me in a sort of different nature path where I'd go for walks and I would just sort of connect with nature around me, you know. Anything that was willing to sort of listen to me, I would ask for guidance. I would ask for healing and or distraction, something that would take my mind away from all of this panic. And to my delight and completely unexpected, one afternoon, as you mentioned, I was out on the balcony in my condo, and there was a little nest sitting on a branch that was hanging over the railing of my balcony, and there was no bird in it at the time. So I just kind of observed, and I looked at this amazing architecture of this nest. This was probably the most beautiful nest I had ever seen. I mean, I see birds' nests often, and it's just kind of like most people see, just sticks kind of piled on top of each other, and there you have it. This was like this beautiful tapestry woven with little like flowers. There was color in it, and the way it was situated on the pine tree needles, these needles came out of the bottom of it, and it looked like part of the design. It was just really beautiful. So I was actually intrigued with the nest itself, and I decided, well, I'll just sit here and see if whatever bird, I'm assuming, owns this little piece of architecture shows up. And about an hour later, a hummingbird showed up. And like most people, I had never seen a hummingbird up close. I mean, they're so elusive anyway. Mm-hmm. And you don't really pay attention to these teeny tiny little bullets that are darting across the sky because, you know, they're so fast. And when it landed in the nest and just kind of like, you know, shimmied herself in the nest, and she had a few like spider webs in her beak and kind of on her breast, and she was, you know, pushing the spider webs into the nest and kind of constructing it a little bit further. And I was just, wow, what is this? Oh my gosh. And eventually she settled into the nest for a moment, and we sort of is whimsical and woo-woo as it sounds, I mean, we literally had eye contact, and that's because she was so close. I didn't dare touch her, and I didn't dare touch the nest, but I sat on my glider, and I just looked at her, and she looked at me, and I thought, I could sit out here all day and see what happens with this bird. And I did. I wound up sitting out there for about 3 hours, and she'd go back and forth and back and forth, and she wasn't afraid of me. I wasn't afraid of her. I didn't distract any of the work that she was doing. She was very comfortable with my presence. And so I decided to just sort of watch her and pay attention to her for the next 3 months. And it was one of the most spectacular and profound experiences of my life, because not only did I get to see the life of a hummingbird and the nesting and the baby being born and how she nurtures her baby to, you know, take the leap out into the world and all of that good stuff. But I realized that there was so much interconnection on this planet. There was so much that she gave, at the same time received from everything around her. Every time she'd come back to the nest with this bright yellow beak, you know, I knew she had been to God knows how many flowers collecting nectar for herself and her baby. I thought, wow, every time she goes to another flower to collect nectar, that beak pollinates something else, and something else grows as a result. And the balance is what I started to really grasp in nature. It is in perfect balance. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take more than it needs, and it doesn't give more than it needs to. And human beings are completely off kilter. They either give too much, and so their life force, their energy is sucked away from them, or they receive too much, and there's no charity in their heart. And so there's an imbalance there. And I realized when I was so engrossed in my own woe is me, you know,
yep,
I wasn't paying attention to the beauty around me. And she brought that to a halt, and I was just in awe. I was like a child again, and it was really a wonderful 3 months.
And, you know, the beauty of it is, you know, I always tell people, you know, find a place to be still. The world will always have the answers for you, but we're never still enough, or we're never quiet enough to receive them. And we demand in the way that we are going to receive it. You know, God will give us the answer when we're still enough and in the right place enough to receive. And you made that choice just to sit on your deck, and you could have looked at that nest and you could have thought, oh, that's nice, that's cute, and gone on your way. But you chose to, A, appreciate her little Taj Mahal of a nest that she was building there. and it is amazing, isn't it, the engineering that they put mm-hmm. into there just with their little beaks. I mean, it's just quite extraordinary. And we look mm-hmm. at it, those small intricacies of these wonderful little creatures, and just how, really, quite honestly, how brilliant they are. You know, they use very much their organic and genetic side of their brain, you know, that structure, but also that trust and that instinct and that knowingness that they have in order to survive, and the balance that they have. There is so mm-hmm. much more for us to learn from these wonderful little creatures around us, and we really should pay more attention to them.
Absolutely. I call it getting in touch with your inner hummingbird. Now, because of this particular experience, as I did the study on the symbolism and, you know, hummingbirds as a totem, everything, I mean, if you think about their life, their sustainability is from nectar. And the place they get nectar is from flowers. I mean, these are the two sweetest things on earth. You think of flowers, they're beautiful. You think of nectar, it's sweet. Mm-hmm. They're in this constant state of joy and elation all the time. And by the way, for being the smallest bird on the planet, the warrior side of the independent strength of this teeny tiny little bird is amazing, because I'm sure you're familiar. You're from the West Coast, right?
Yes.
Pacific time. So here in California, we get the Santa Ana winds. And where I was living at the time in Valencia, the Santa Ana winds come up, and they're so powerful and so strong. You know, they knock over trees. Mm-hmm. They, you know, affect power poles and all of that kind of stuff. And I remember laying in bed at night, because the sliding glass door and the balcony that I spent that time on was right adjacent to my bedroom. It led right out from my bedroom, and the tree was right there, and the light post on my street just so happened, coincidentally, quote unquote, mm-hmm. to always shine this very dull amber light on her nest. And so I could wake up at 4 in the morning if I wanted to and just look out, and I could see her in the nest sleeping. And it was so surreal. But the Santa Ana winds would pick up at like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I would hear them outside just whistling and howling. And I'd look out, and I remember the first night this happened, I looked out and I saw her, and and this is after she had had her, she was incubating the egg, and the tree branch that she was nesting on was literally like being blown so hard it was like parallel with the ground, mm. you know. And I was just so paranoid that I got up in the middle of the night and went into my office and did some research on hummingbird nests. And it's funny the answer that the universe gave me when I did my Google search. And I remember Googling something like, you know, can a hummingbird's nest be, you know, destroyed by wind, and can they die, you know? And and the answer was very simple. And whoever it was, I can't remember, had the information. They said hummingbirds pretty much know what they're doing. So the likelihood of that happening is very slim. Not to say that that couldn't happen, but they know what they're doing. So just trust that instinctively they know how to build a nest that is so solid. And sure enough, this went on for weeks and, you know, every few days. And sure enough, I'd go to sleep and I would say just a little prayer to, you know, St. Francis of Assisi, whatever, that just kind of, you know, keep my little friend safe. And sure enough, the next morning, and always at the dawning would always be very calm. And I'd look out and there she would be just sitting there looking around like, what? Did I miss something? You know?
Yes.
And so, you know what I mean? It was that they persevere.
Resilient.
And remain, yes, resilient. And they remain stable in unstable situations. And that is what the human being can learn.
Yeah.
Is remain calm, grounded, stable, confident in instability, because no one said there wasn't going to be instability in our lifetime. And these animals, all of them, I mean, it's not just the hummingbird, as I studied for years afterward, they all just know. They have a knowing. And we think, the human thinks they're so superior, but really we're not.
No way. I mean, you know, the thing is about, you know, God's creatures on this planet is that they live, you know, 99% by instinctual, by listening, by knowing, by trusting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what do we live by? We live by data. And we don't always compute this data or, you know, read this data in the right way. So we assume or we judge or we set up into fear mode because we haven't, you know, looked at this data for really what it means. Because we're only looking at it with the head. We're not incorporating the heart and the soul and the spirit. And so we panic. That's the reason why we're not so trusting. And that's the reason why we can't weather storms the way they can. Is that they know the storm will be over at some point. Just hold on, have faith. And with us, we go into the panic mode. So, how did Artemis come into it? Why do you choose that name?
I remember sitting on my bed one evening as I looked out at her, and it had been a couple weeks that I had been journaling and taking some photographs, and I thought, well, gosh, I feel like I have a relationship with her. So instead of just calling her Little Bird, which I used to just say, little bird, you know, I thought I should name her. What should I name her? And at the time, I was starting to see that the distraction of her in my life was eliminating, or at least at the time, alleviating the panic and anxiety. Mm-hmm. I was sleeping during the night. So this, more than anything, for me personally, and what I want to share with other people, is how healing nature can be if we just pay attention, because this healing journey was something that was spectacular in my life. I was like, wow, is this really happening? Am I really going a day, 2 days, 3 days, a week, and I haven't had a panic attack? So I remember looking at her and I was just thinking to myself, thank you so much. I mean, this is so strange, but thank you. What can I name her? And I had a deck of, have you ever heard of Doreen Virtue?
Yes, most certainly. I use her cards, actually.
Yeah. So I had a deck of her goddess guidance cards. And so I pulled them out and I thought, okay, I'm going to ask this little hummingbird who she is. And so I did in my mind. What's your name? Who are you? And I shuffled the deck and I pulled out a card. Now, this is the perfect example of living in a place of non-attachment, because I would watch her and look at her and I thought, oh, wouldn't she, is she like a goddess? Is she Athena? Is she one of those beautiful names that everybody knows, you know? And so I was kind of attached to having her have one of those really
exotic names.
Yes, exotic goddess names. Mm-hmm. And I pulled the card Artemis. And I thought, Artemis? Wow, I've never heard of that before. But when I read who Artemis was, and the image on the card is of kind of like a, she was kind of like a tomboy. And she had a bow and arrow, and she had all of these animals at her feet. And it said that Artemis was the guardian goddess of nature. And she used her bow and arrow not to harm anything, but to stay focused on her goal at all the time, and that was protecting nature. And I thought, oh my, okay,
yes.
Yeah, this is her. I mean, especially when she fiercely protect her nestling and everything around her. And so I thought, well, that's her name. It may not sound like foo-foo and exotic, but this is who she's telling me she is. And with every single day, that's exactly who she proved herself to be.
Rather ironic, though, it's who you've become.
Yeah, it is, huh? Wow. You know?
Yeah. You've become...
You just brought that to my attention.
You've become the Artemis. Passing the role on, you know, because you've become that advocate. You've become that, you know, that spotlight, that attention, that education, and that protector. So you have become, in quite essentially, the Artemis of all creatures, great and small, at the present moment. So, you know, is again, one tiny little hummingbird. And it didn't just change your life, it's changed the lives of all other creatures because you've become Artemis.
Well, I will take that, and hopefully I will be a faithful steward like Artemis was. I just feel such a profound appreciation. And, you know, this is the thing. I try to tell people, anybody that's willing to just have a conversation with me, and I'm talking just friends or, you know, someone, an interview or whatever, is you don't understand how much gratitude, you know, they say gratitude begets opportunities for more gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
So the more you're thankful, the more the universe brings into your life to be thankful for. And someone might say, well, gosh, you know, I lost my job, or I'm having problems in my relationship, or I'm not making enough money. How can I find gratitude? And to that I say, just go outside because it's free.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Nature has no cover charge. It is completely free. And you can start there by feeling gratitude. If you just go out and think of the fact that on a summer afternoon, if you're outdoors and you're at a park and it's hot and you want to get some shade, whoever planted that tree that you're going to sit under had all the confidence in the world that when they planted that tree would grow. The fact that all of nature responds to our will,
mm-hmm.
okay, we plant a rose bush and guess what grows? The roses. And we say to that, wow. Thank you. We plant a tree. We plant, you know, anything that grows from our hand, the human hand, is acting upon our will. They're saying to us, okay, yes. Oh, you're going to plant me right here for shade in your backyard or around your pool? All right. I'll participate. How are you not grateful for that in and of itself?
But nature is never, you know, just one purpose. I mean, you take a rose, it's beautiful. So it visually is feeding us, you know, the fragrance that comes from us, the sensory feeding us. And then the things that are made out of the rose pollen, you know, the roses themselves, it continues on, the art that comes from it. I mean, when we look at anything in nature, it never only serves one purpose. It's when there's so much to learn from nature and its multidimensional ways of, you know, the trees of oxygenating. You know, there's the shade, there's the oxygen, there's the vibration. There's so much that comes from them that I think we as human beings have just got to stop, you know, looking at things and truly start seeing them. And seeing them with feeling, and seeing them with gratitude, seeing them with kindness, and not just looking at things of, well, what does it profit me? And I think we need to change that dialogue. You know, is how can we cohesively live together, nature and I, and serve each other?
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. And that for me is the perfect world. Mm-hmm. To see nature as just this to cohabitate with it, to appreciate it. And you're right, you know, I mean, something like a rose, I mean, the medicinal purpose for, I mean, look at before we had, you know, the pharmaceuticals or whatever. I mean, way back thousands of years ago, they were using plants and flower essences to heal. They were using honey.
Yes.
Organic honey as a medicinal use. And, you know, suddenly the human gets involved and it's all about mass profit. It's all about, you know, one of the things that I'm really trying to, what I really want to advocate for is to stop calling ourselves, because we are consumers.
Mm-hmm.
When you think of the word consume, it's like you just suck the life force
out of
something.
But gluttonous. As you said, the hummingbird, you know, just goes and takes what it needs and always leaves something in gratitude. We're gluttonous.
Yes.
You know, we're wasteful. We're not respectful. All we want is more. We're never satisfied. Because we're not feeding, you know, the balance, we're so out of balance that we keep shoving more and more. We can keep consuming more and more and more to satisfy a need, that if we found that balance within ourselves, both on, you know, the physical, mental, spiritual, and heart side of ourselves, we would actually find that balance and be so much more fed than this gluttony that we've become.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when you think about, you know, how much it takes to feed a family now, you know, that isn't something that has always been. It's something that we evolved into.
Yes.
You know, that's why you look at the factory farms. I mean, they've got to slaughter God knows how many more animals now to feed this consuming culture that just, you know, and so one of the things that if someone says, there's nothing I can do, I don't have control over what's going on over there and what that big corporation is doing over there and whatever. But
yes,
you can. The tiny little things like, I'm going to cut my food consumption in half.
Yeah.
You know, we can sustain if we cut it in half. We can. People don't think they can. They don't wait. That whole scientific thing about give yourself 10 to 15 minutes after you start eating your meal for your brain to catch up with your stomach or vice versa. It's true. It's absolutely the truth. You only eat, and people eat so fast that they feel like they're still hungry. Give yourselves 10 minutes. You'll see you're not. You're satiated. Let's eat just until we're satiated instead of stuffed.
Eat with your mind as well. You know, have your mind tell you this has sustained me. You eat locally, support your local people, and not, you know, the foods that are coming from some other country. You know, okay, yeah, it's nice to have some things from, you know, we get Hawaiian food or obviously American Florida oranges, etc. You know, and that's okay. But I know for a fact that they pick these fruits before they're ready. And then they ship them. And by the time you've gone to the grocery store and picked them up, they're already 3 and 4 weeks old and they've had to mature on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
the amount of nutrition, that is probably one of the biggest problems. We're not getting nutrition from the food like we used to. And that's why we're eating so much more, to feed as nutritionally. We need to pay attention to what is really filled with nutrition, that really is feeding our body, our minds, our spirits, we've got to, you know, choose our foods that aren't just empty or empty of all nutrition, that is just bulk. Because when we eat foods that are nutritional, that are truly feeding us, we don't need to eat a lot more. We certainly do not.
Right.
Now, how did benevolent come about? I love that name and I love the logo. You know, benevolent, a way of being. It's so, you know, it's beautiful. So tell me how that came about.
Well, it over time, it was just one of those things that I wanted to start a company that gave back. And the word benevolent, just in and of itself, when we speak of the benevolent planet or a benevolent being, it is for the purpose of doing good. It's pure out of the intention of giving, and love is what benevolent really means. It's organized for the purpose of doing good. So as I started to, once the book was completed and I was kind of, you know, thinking about, because really this changed my life. It changed or awakened me to the next chapter, pun intended, of my life's work. I was a graphic designer for marketing and advertising out of college. And that was really fulfilling and it was enriching and I was creative and I loved helping other companies. And then when this experience happened with Artemis, I started to do a lot more study on, like you mentioned, animal symbolism, totems, you know, paying attention to if I'm going on a walk and a raven lands at my feet, you know, it's trying to teach people the creatures show up in your life for a reason. It might be something very small, we take it for granted, but if you do a little bit of research on the symbolism of the creatures that are showing up and wanting you just for that moment in time and space to pay attention, they've got a message for you. Mm-hmm. They're all divine messengers, they really are. So to try to teach that was something that I wanted to do. And as time went on, I started to study the bees. I would have experiences with bees, little honeybees, and I'm not allergic to them. I've been stung, and no, it's not fun. Mm-hmm. But there was something about the honeybee that I started to feel a connection with, and then realized that they were in terrible peril. In 2006, I remember hearing something about colony collapse disorder. And by the time 2008 rolled around and I was writing about the hummingbird being a pollinator, then it was more and more, and it was more in Europe, and then it was starting to come over into the United States and people were starting to see what was happening to the bee population here. And so I started studying it more and more, and that's when I said, okay, I want to start a company and I'm going to name it Benevolent. And it's going to be with a double E, and I'm going to design baby onesies. I'm going to have a little character, and as time goes on, hopefully everybody will kind of see what emerges from this, because I have a lot of really great things in store. But I wanted to give back to the nature world around me through products, through research, and that's where Benevolent came about. And so, you know, her logo is the bee, and the bee is the single most integrated, cohesive creature on the planet. And people don't, they think of a beehive as just like this scary buzzing thing that if you get near, they're all going to sting you and kill you. The bees are so harmonious, and their role in our world and in their hive. I mean, if anybody takes time to just study the dynamic in the hive, it is outrageously just awe-inspiring. Mm-hmm. You're just like, are you kidding me? So I just want to give back. I just want to create awareness and give back in just my little way. I know there's tons of big organizations out there that are doing the same work, but any way we can reach more and more people, we can change the world. I know this.
Well, that's the whole thing, is people receive messages in different ways. So, you know, the more of us that are speaking out there, the message will be heard, no matter, you know, how it's spoken. You know, you're speaking someone's language that can hear you, and they will hear you. For others, they need to hear it from someone else in a different way. But, you know, just keep speaking. There's something you've written here that I really love, actually. It's Noel's message of spiritual pollination. And with each of us within each of us is the capacity to connect with the universe, with nature, with all the higher self. Through the eyes of nature, one is made privy to the profound goodness that pervades in all that exists and coexists. The universe is always listening and responding to our feelings and our thoughts, our heart's calling. Be open to the unique ways in which God, the universe, and the supreme intelligence, however we choose to label it, communicates with you. Teachers come in all shapes and sizes and species. We simply need to be quiet in our increscent mind chatter and listen for all the sentient beings that have something to share in supporting our journey towards becoming a more evolved and self-aware human race. Everything is connected. The pervasive interconnectedness, the innate giving and receiving that exists within nature is a lesson for humans to learn, to cherish, respect, and preserve in all forms of life. For everything affects everything, and that in turn affects everything. That's very beautifully written.
Oh, thank you. Gosh. I think sometimes if I was writing this book, and this is another thing, is I would be, I'd write and then I'd set it aside because I had my quote unquote day job as a graphic designer. And then when I would feel inspired, this was kind of a long process because I never planned to write the book. I never planned to have this be like in book form and sharing it with others. It was just a very personal journey for me. But I would go back to edit something that I had written prior, and I'd go back and read it, and I would think to myself, I don't remember writing this.
I am totally with you there. I've written many an article. I've gone back and said, if I didn't, this is good. Who wrote this? And then it says my name at the bottom. Because you're writing in your knowingness. You're writing in your now, in your presence.
Yes.
And, you know, that's what was needed to be written at that time. That was what's needed to be said. And in going back and reading it, it actually becomes a new education for you, a new, revelation for you. And that sometimes you're writing ahead of yourself, you know.
That's exactly it. I would think, okay, was I channeling? I mean, that's kind of what it's like. I felt almost a little honored that whatever was coming through me was something that divine spirit, whatever, wanted to get out there. And I was the conduit. I was the channel for it. And I'd go back and read it. And I remember telling my mom, you know, every time I'd go back to edit, after the book was completed, and I'd go back and read through it and edit, I would cry like I was having the experience all over again because it was her story. I feel like when I tell people my book, it almost feels like I have to say our book because artists and Baby were a co-creator in this work.
They certainly were. I mean, they're your epiphany and your muse. But also, I mean, the beautiful gift of you know, how they were your redirection. You know, they were God's way of putting you on the right path. And it is quite amazing the little things that happen to change one's path. I was interviewed yesterday for a local magazine, and it was like, how did this come about? And I always say to people, this, the radio show, now the radio station, and the gift I have of interviewing people like you who are out there making a difference in the world just by sharing your own inspiration and how it's become so innovative in the direction that you're going and serving the world. I'm the one that received gift, but all of this came out of depression. So we can't look at something and go, you know, this profound or this big, huge thing that had to happen. It's the small things that happen that change your directions. It's the, you know, peculiar things. Who would have thought radio show, I would have been offered a radio show when I was in a depression? But it was something I had said that somebody picked up and said, I think you need to have your own radio show. Never done it before. Went off and did it. That was my sign. That was my redirection. That's what put me on this path. We have to get out of our heads sometimes and just understand, however big or small it is, that gift that is given to us is to shift us into the direction that we're meant to go in, and simply take the journey, because it's wondrous, it's exciting, it's liberating. And in sharing that journey, you are now educating but inspiring other people to take their own journey into their own redirection.
Yeah, that's I like you had mentioned earlier, if I would have just seen this nest and kind of said, oh, wow, that's cool, that's nice, and went about my life and not just stopped and said, okay, I'm going to take this opportunity to learn about this. It's presented itself to me, this bird, and I'm going to sit with it regularly, and I'm gonna learn from it, and I'm gonna learn about myself through this experience. And it changed my whole direction. You know, it put me on another path of my life's work. Mm-hmm. And it's true that the teachers come in so many different forms. Yeah. And it's like the universe knew that I would respond to nature because I loved nature. So that was a way of speaking to me, if you will, mm-hmm. and, you know, hoping that I would listen. But everybody has their own, that special, unique thing about them that God will communicate with them. However that happens, we just have to be, like you said, in the moment and paying attention. We hear this message a lot from great spiritual teachers and inspirational speakers about in the moment, but you can't emphasize that enough. Yeah. Because it's the truth. It really is.
You know, and I know that, you know, when you were going through your panic attack, somebody saying to you in the moment, you would just want to probably hit them. Because all you can feel in that moment, you know, I suffer from anxiety myself. All you can feel at that time is this, that horrible anxiety riddling through your entire body, and none of your intellect, or, you know, I'm a devout spiritual person, you could probably say, even that at that time cannot calm me down. It needs to kind of run its course. And so I have to sometimes just let that anxiety have its voice. It's a release. Get it out there and then go, okay, right, you've had your voice now. Now let's bring it back to the balance. Because that is telling me, obviously, what I'm doing or what is happening around me is wrong for me. And so you, right. Okay, I register that. I've got it now. I've got the message. So let's take some deep breaths. Let's calm down. I obviously have to change direction. And we have to have these extremes for us to truly get the message. So when you are having something that's happening to you, no matter what it is in your life, it could be an illness, it could be a loss, it could be a loss of a job, it could be anxiety attack, no matter what it is, don't look upon it as being the end of the world. It's the end of a chapter. And there's a new one to present itself. Be willing to change directions. And you don't have to know where you're going. You don't have to know each step. Instinctually, you know how to put one foot in front of the other. Just be willing to take the journey.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, what we see over time with human beings is, and maybe that was the plan here on Earth, on this Earth plane, is that humans have a tendency to learn through adversity as opposed to learning through wisdom. Yeah. There was probably a time in the human consciousness that we did learn through wisdom. But for some reason, it's like we've evolved into the beings that only respond to adversity. And yeah. I would love to bring us back to a place of having, you know, gentle lessons, having that feather kind of brush across your brow, like, okay, this isn't right, so we need to change courses, as opposed to a
hatchet in the head.
Yeah. Yes. You know, it's just, if we could just go back to just paying attention to our higher self, to quieting ourselves, not being in a rat race or being a sheep, you know, find who you are. Take time to get to know yourself so that you can learn through the wisdom around you, the natural world around you, because it's here for us to learn from. We just have to be willing to.
It is changing. You know. We've elevated into this fifth dimension. We are raising vibrationally. We are seeking that peace. And I think the biggest thing that is happening is we are embracing the permission to love ourselves and to live more in tranquility. And we're making the choice not to embrace or be good by the fear-mongering that has been. So I think we are changing as a society, and the more people do and inspire others to do so, that permission to let go of what does not serve you and to embrace that love and equilibrium within you and live your life in that code, I think is something that really is something that people are reaching out for, grabbing hold of, and choosing to take that path. And, you know, more and more every day, I think it's really, really growing. Can you give us a few facts on the bees? We haven't talked about the bats. Just on the essentials of what this pollination actually means to us as a human race.
Well, gosh, it means a third of our food supply. I mean, you know, they health officials say, you know, or doctors of wellness say, you know, when you go grocery shopping, you need to primarily shop on the perimeter of the store. If you want to find the most nutritious and healthy foods for your body, stay outside of the center aisles, because everything there is sort of manufactured, and the whole foods are the fruits and the vegetables and the nuts and all of that stuff on that perimeter aisles of the grocery store. So imagine that those foods on the periphery of the grocery store don't exist. Imagine that almonds, which are their finding, is one of, if not the single most nutritious food on the planet, almonds.
It's raw B17 almonds. Formula, yeah.
Yeah, so that is one of the primary food sources that honeybees pollinate. But then you talk about 100, 150 more. I mean, your watermelons, your apples, your cherries, all those, you know, succulent fruits of the summer that you're having your backyard barbecue with your children. You know, these are, our children are the ones that we have to educate. Mm-hmm. Hence, another reason for Benevolent and the subsequent children's book series, and hopefully feature animation film, to teach children to embrace these pollinators, to release the fear that has been placed on the bee, you know, because people hear about bee stings and, oh my gosh, yes. The fear about the bats, you know, all you hear is, or see movies of vampire bats and how they suck the blood. No, right. That's not true. You know, so this is a whole education thing. But our bees are, you know, a third of our food supply. The U.S. beekeepers reported 40 to 100% loss of their beehives just last year.
Is this because of the pesticides and things like this? What are they contributing it to?
Well, in 2006, in the movie Vanishing of the Bees, there were no science had anything that was definitive. As time has gone on, they're still saying that there isn't one absolute thing, that there's so many things that humans are doing that can contribute. But what they have found now is that pesticides, this mass agricultural pesticide usage is killing the bees. And basically what happens is the bees leave, the thousands and thousands in a beehive leave the hive to go forage during the day and just never go back. Mm-hmm. So they die off in, you know, en route to their foraging, and then the queen and the drones and the larva that's in the hive is left to die because the worker bees are the only ones that supply
right.
the food. So it's really, they're calling them neonicotinoids or neonics. Now, those are the pesticides, but they're in everything. So when I say this to you and I say big agriculture, yes. But big agriculture is contributing to all of the things that we as just the everyday consumer go and purchase at big box stores.
Yes.
So when you're going to big box stores, you're getting agriculture, flowers, plants, any kind of fruit, horticulture that has already been poisoned with these
And don't get confused with organic, because as soon as it's been in contact with anything that has been pesticide in transit or anything else, it's contaminated anyway.
Exactly. So, I know first and foremost what we have to avoid is just the things that you can buy at the store, like Roundup, mm-hmm. pesticides that we want to use in our gardens because, we don't want this, that, or the other. But we have to be so diligent. And like you said, we're at a place where there might not be an immediate solution because everything becomes contaminated in some way, shape, or form. But if we commit, I call this a coalition of the willing, if we commit to conscious decision-making in our purchasing power, go to your local farmers markets, talk to the local nurseries, talk to the people that own the nurseries, because most of the time, they're horticulturists. Most of the time they have a nursery because they love horticulture.
Right.
And ask them what they know about the crops that they have in their store. Ask them if there's, organic and what that means in their establishment. No one says that there's like a be-all, end-all answer right now.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're just diligent, just don't run off to these big box stores and just start filling your basket with a bunch of pesticides. And that's one of the things we can do to at least stave off or learn more about this colony collapse disorder.
Well, the thing is about the big giants, and we think we're powerless. You vote your government in, you can vote them out. You have these big giants because you have fed them. If you start supporting your individual farmers, your local farmers that are growing these things, okay, you're going to pay a bit more, but you're going to consume less. You're going to be healthier. You're going to be more satisfied. And not only that, you're supporting your community, and your community is gaining strength. You do have the power, and the power is not to keep giving more and more power to those big giants or to the governments that are making decisions and not on our behalf. So support and band together and support each other and be aware. Learn. Take the time to read up on things. Ask questions. Understand what is happening and what you can do to be a part of the equation to stop it from happening.
Right. And part of what I consider spiritual pollination, if you will, is don't feed into the anger.
Yes.
We, especially on social media, you see Facebook posts and I know that the intention is there, that people are so outraged and angry about, what's going on anywhere when it comes to something close to their heart in animal welfare. So, for example, you've got the Taiji Cove in Japan, whereby they slaughter thousands and thousands of dolphins a year for their meat. And this meat is laden with mercury. It's not even edible, but they feed it to their people anyway. And you get these posts where people, while they mean well because they are angry and they're outraged, every post is feeding into that outrage.
Vibrationally.
And exactly. And so the universe doesn't go, well, your anger is placed over here, which we know you're angry because you want to do good for these dolphins. The universe just says that's a vibratory response right there, and we're going to respond vibratorily to it. It's an energetic response that we will send. We will have a like energetic response. People have to just, I know it's hard, but just as soon as you see something that's not right in your heart, like the slaughter, like whatever is close to your heart in anything in your life, stop, and instead of feeding into that, those, you know, SLBs and, oh, how I, you know, if I were over there, I'd get a shot. Please, please, don't feed into that. Stop and say a prayer. Visualize the dolphins safe, yep, and harmonious and swimming free and abundant. Visualize the hunters out there turning their boats around and deciding this is no longer serving us anymore.
Right.
Visualize something that makes you feel good, and then we'll have a matching energetic response. That's one of the greatest things when people say there's nothing I can do. Yes, there is. Just your thoughts and what you're putting out there changes the world. It just has to be a collective. We have to have,
yes,
you know, that critical mass doing that, the coalition of the willing.
And it has already averted some disasters, things that were predicted, that because our collective energy and people caring more and being aware more, not turning a blind eye anymore, and as you say, sending out those good vibrations of love and nurture, you know, we are actually have already started changing things. You may not be able to see the impact straight away, but that doesn't mean you stop. It means that you escalate and you get more people to join you, and you just keep on sending out those good vibrations. So eventually, how can somebody harm something else when they're living in good vibrations?
Right.
They just can't. So keep sending those good vibrations out. We're coming to the end, yeah, of this hour. It's gone so fast. Would you please let everybody know how to get hold of your book, how to get hold of you, and how to be a part of Benevolent?
Well, you could go onto my website, which is benevolent.com. So it's BEE-Nevolent, BEE-NEVOLENT.com. And then you could Google my name and it would take you to the website. I'm on Facebook, so you can check me out, Noelle Mead Izzy, and I've got a community page. I'm also a nature and wildlife photographer, so I have a lot of photography on my website, and then I do blogs that, like I said, I associate our human life and our human condition with the symbolism of the animal that I've taken a picture of. And every photo you see is not something where I've sought an animal out. It's where I have been, and I say I'm going to take my camera, and the animal shows up.
Right.
And for me, that's my alignment with nature over time, where they raise their hand and say, might you tell a little bit about me?
Yes.
And to that I say, I would be delighted. So,
and we're delighted, you know, that you are. And, you know, this is a good thing for you to do as an adult, to do with your children, to share, to give as a gift, and just, you know, to reconnect people. Because when we connect to nature, we learn to connect to ourselves. Thank you so much for being on the air, my dear. I really have enjoyed this, and we've got to do it again. We have to get a round table going and discuss this further. So I thank you so much for the work that you're doing, and for being with us.
And thank you. I appreciated it so much, and it was such a pleasure talking to you.
Okay, folks. Well, that was another great episode for you. Until next time, take care.
Thank you for tuning in to PLV Radio. We hope that our programming has inspired you. Please feel free to visit the website to find past shows and schedules. Find your favorite hosts, leave comments about your experience, and share ideas for future shows. Don't forget to visit us on your favorite social media websites, which you will find links to at plv-radio.com. Listen with your friends and share the inspiration.